Good morning, everybody. We finished chapter 6 in Sefer Shmuel, Shmuel Aleph. We finished the text, but we have not yet finished discussing all that has to be said. And there are a number of things that I want to cover with you this morning, and hopefully we may even do chapter 7, and if we do that, that'll be very good. And I'll explain why later. In chapter 6, we learned of the fact that the Plishtim send back the Aron. The Aron comes to Bet Shemesh, and as the Aron arrives in Bet Shemesh, it says that Bet Shemesh kotsrim k'tzirchitim ba'emek, Pasuk 13, the people of Bet Shemesh were harvesting the harvest of the grain in the valley. They lifted their eyes and they saw the Aron, and they were happy to see. We find out, of course, later that they are punished for having looked in the Aron. And the Pasuk says, Pasuk 19, Vayar ba'anshei Bet Shemesh, God smote the people of Bet Shemesh, ki ro'u ba'aron Hashem, because they saw the Ark of God. Vayar ba'am shivim ish, Chamishim elef ish, God smote 70 people, 50,000. And we said, of course, the fact that there is no vav connecting the 70 and the 50,000 is something that tells us that we should sit up and take notice something special is happening over here. It's not necessarily 50,000 plus 70, and therefore the rabbis tell us that there were 70 people who were equal to 50,000. Because there were no 50,000 in Bet Shemesh altogether. Yes, Sandy.
The number 70. There was another place, 70,000. That
they know the members of the Sanhedrin. The members of the Sanhedrin were 70. In a sense, so what it represents, according to Chazal, it also represents the idea that each one of those who fell was equal to 70 of Sanhedrin. That means great people are the ones who were punished. The question is, why this punishment? We only began to talk about it last week. So let me read to you a few Ma'amorei Chazal. And some of them, of course, are going to be very, very interesting to us in terms of our ongoing, I say, it's becoming even more intense now, the idea of garments. Watch. The Gemara, the Medrash, Eliyahu Rabba says the following. On the pasuk that Beit Shemesh were harvesting the harvest of the grain, and they lifted their eyes and they saw the ark and they were very happy to see. Sarnei Plishtim shehayu melavim et ha'aron, the officers, the leaders of Plishtim who had accompanied the Aron, kivon shehayu rechokim Beit Shemesh k'alpayim ama bamidah, when they were 2,000 amah away from Bet Shemesh, Amru, they said, listen to this, they said, Natol et habegadim, let's take the clothing, v'nanichum b'makom mutzna, and put it in a concealed place. V'nir'eh, and then we will see, ma heim osim le'elohehem, what they're going to do with their God. Shekein kibatnuhu anachnu, this is, we're the ones who gave great honor to their God, v'chein also, and so they did. What it means is the following. What's significant, of course, is that they are 2,000 amah away from Bet Shemesh. The Sarnei Plishtim had been following the Aron. So they say, let us take our garments now and hide them. The simple meaning, of course, of the hiding of the garments is so that nobody should know that they are the kings of Plishtim. They want to be incognito. They don't want anybody to recognize them. They're going to stand from the distance and they want to see what's going to be the response of the Jewish people when the Aron returns. Of course, the fact that they stay 2,000 amah away, the Medrash is telling us something. The idea of 2,000 amah appeared at the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua, when it says that the Jewish people are to cross the Jordan, the The Oron traveled 2,000 Amma away from them. 2,000 Amma represents a sense of distance, the fear, the awe, the reverence of the Oron, 2,000 Amma away. That's also Tum Shabbos, yes. So here it is, they take off their garments, and I would say that they're most probably in civilian clothing. The garments and the raiment of royalty that they normally wore, they take off. All right? I don't think we have to think too far in order to understand the symbolism involved over here. Before the Oron and in the presence of God, as they watch what is going to happen, in a sense they see themselves naked of all of the trappings of greatness. Now let's watch what happens when the Oron comes to Beit Shemesh. Miyad notlu et habgadim, the officers of Plishtim, immediately they took their garments and put them in a place of concealment. The Anshei Beit Shemesh, now on the other side, 2,000 Amma away, the people of Beit Shemesh, when they saw the Oron, hoyo lahem litol et habgadim, they should have taken their garments, their own garments, ulahanichom al pneim, and put them over their faces. That's what the Medrash says they should have done. And they should have prostrated themselves before the Oron an hour, 2 hours, or 3 hours. In a sense, they should have been overcome with a sense of awe. The great God of Israel, the Ark of the Covenant. In order that the name of God should be great and holy throughout the entire world. In a sense, the people of Beit Shemesh have an opportunity very rarely, that comes very rarely in history. They have the great opportunity of acting in a way that is befitting this moment. We always have difficulty knowing how to react and how to respond at great moments. Here is a great moment. What they should have done would have been to cover their faces, prostrate themselves before God, in a sense, bending and bowing and accepting upon themselves the heavenly yoke. And that would have been a source of great kiddush shem shemayim, the sanctification of God's name. V'heim lo asu kein. Medrash says they didn't do so. Elo kishohoyu romim et ha'aron, when they saw the Aron, hitchilu sochakin, they began to laugh. V'zog v'netenayim, they lifted their eyes. V'ondim, and they stood. U'meragdim, and they danced around. U'medabrim dvarim yitedim, and they spoke, they said words that were unnecessary. They didn't know how to respond. They didn't respond in the way that they should have. Lefichach noflu miYisrael 50,000. That's why 50,000 fell in Israel. The gan Sanhedri gedola imahem, the great Sanhedrin with them, which is represented by the number 70. Mi horaget kol elu, who killed all of these? Have they omer lo horag otam ela anshei Beit Shemesh shelo hoyu behem derech eretz? Who killed them all, the people of Beit Shemesh, who didn't conduct themselves the way they should have? L'lamedcha shelo chosam Yisrael afilu shove pruta shelo kedin ela hakol bedin emet. The story here comes to teach us that there is nothing that issues from God which is unjust. If a Jew loses a penny, it's din emet. It's God's divine justice. They did not conduct themselves the way they should have. There should have been a sense of awe, of fear, of trembling. At least they should have had the same kind of awe and reverence that the people of Plishtim did. But wait, there are another few medrashim that we have to read. Yes. I don't think it doesn't mean that. It means people who are equal in their stature and in their greatness to the people of the Sanhedrin. One has to know how to respond to great events. Yes. Well, not bad. It's a good example. The idea of covering the eyes during Bir Hakanim. The truth is that it really applied only in the Bet HaMikdash. I remember, you know, as a little child, I was always afraid, you know, that if you'd look at the Kohanim like they get blind, Chas v'Shalom. The truth is that, in a sense, that was the idea of the Beis HaMikdash, because in the Beis HaMikdash, the divine presence was upon the fingers of the Kohanim. The Birchat Kohanim, they uttered the ineffable name of God. The Yud Kei Vav Kei was uttered in a very special way. One may look at the Kohanim today. But in order to continue the customs, of the truth is that the Kohanim cover their hands, so that even in the event that somebody is going to look, you're not going to see the hands of the Kohanim. But yes, there are certain things that you just don't look at. There should have been a sense of awe, and they didn't have it. It was obviously a great event to them. They were full of joy, but not fear. Should have been fear. Vayach ba'anshei Beit Shemesh. The Gemara Masechta Sota says, God smote the people of Beit Shemesh. Ki ro'u ba'aron Hashem. Pasuk 19. Vayach ba'anshei Beit Shemesh. Ki ro'u ba'aron Hashem. Says the Gemara, Mishum d'ro'u, because they saw, Vayach, God smote them. Why? Says Rabbi Avu. Chadama, Rabbi Avu and Rabbi Loza. Chadama one says, Kotzrin u'mishtachavin hayu. I believe this is brought by Rashi. They harvested and they bowed. In a sense, they continue the same activity they were doing before. Maybe the arrival of the Aron is a bit of an interruption in terms of what they're doing. It may also mean something else. It may mean the idea that they wanted at one and the same time Olam HaZeh and Olam HaHaba. Can't have them at the same time. There are certain moments at which one has to pause. There had to be time for pause. Stop the kotzrim, and now it's time for mishtachavim. The Chad Omar, and one statement, one rabbi in the Gemara said, Mili Nami Omar. They said things that were not right. What was it that they said? Man amroch diimrait, man ota aloch diifaist. Meaning the following. Who got you angry that you left, and who appeased you that you came back? In a sense, what they're saying is, you've decided to come back. They may also be saying something that represents a lack of faith. What we have to understand is the philosophic or the theological fallout of the Aron being captured by Plishtim. It demonstrates a weakness. God can't take care of his own Aron. It seems as though God is being taken into captivity. God was taken off into exile. Isn't there something about an event of this sort that might very well weaken one's faith and one's trust in God? Well, there it is. You got angry and off you went. You were helpless. You were weak. Nothing you could do. And you were taken. Yes?
It's a reaction that would be, I think, totally foreign to the way people think today. When something like that happens, everybody says we have to do a cheshbon nefesh and see what is wrong that this happened.
All right, let me ask you the classic example of our time, the Shoah. Did the Shoah have a devastating effect on faith? Of course it did. We're talking, I think I have quoted very often Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. I've quoted it often, and it appears in a sefer that was published posthumously. On many occasions, he said that following the Shoah, faith was being lost by Klal Yisrael. In their masses, Jews had lost faith. And therefore, the establishment of the State of Israel, he says, saved faith. It saved the faith of Klal Yisrael. If not for the establishment of the State of Israel, who knows how many Jews there might yet remain in the world who would have real faith in God. There are devastating events, not only in the life of Klal Yisrael, but in the lives of individuals. Devastating events that have a profound impact on one's ability to maintain faith. They lost faith because of this terrible, terrible tragedy. It isn't a tragedy. The Aron, the Ark of God, that which split the Jordan before them. There were so many miracles. There was so much power and so much might that emanated from the Aron, and the Aron is taken off into captivity. This caused a loss of faith. But what they didn't understand is the following: Medrash Yalkut Shimoni says the mistake that they made is Medrash says, "Bishar sheYisrael osin ritzono shel makom," when Israel does the will of God, heimosich. They add might and strength to God, as it says, Pasuk in Bamidbar, "Va'aton now yigdal no koach Hashem." Let the might and the strength of God be great. When we do the will of God, we, so to speak, in a sense, we give strength and we give might to God. But when Jews anger God, Pasuk in Hazinu, "Tzur yeladecha." The mighty one who gave birth to you, Keshi, is weakened. In the event that we don't act the way we do, we, so to speak, weaken the strength of God. So you're right. What they should have said is not the accusing finger at the Aron, like, why did you get upset? Why were you so angry that you went off into, or taken off into captivity? And what appeased you that you turned around and you came back? What they should have said is, what did we do that caused the Aron to be taken into captivity, and what is it that we might have done now that has finally brought the Aron back?
Is there a parallel between them not meeting the Aron over the years that was over there, the way we don't?
Tov miot. Tov miot. Very good. Good. I'll get to that in a moment. Let's hear Sandy has a, I see, you know, after Aviva, what you need is you need the opportunity to ask questions. Right? Okay, so I'm the one that gets all the questions. Go ahead. Where is Shmuel in all of this? Good question. We want to get to Shmuel. The next chapter is Shmuel from beginning to end. It's all Shmuel. All right? So the answer to your question is coming. The answer to your question comes now. That's right. So I'm going to read another. I'm going to read another Maimon Chazal that's going to present precisely the idea that you're talking about. To what extent did they miss it? To what extent were they broken up by it? Had they made peace with the idea that the Aron is in the by Plishtim, what steps did they take, if any? Or did they sort of throw up their hands in despair, and that's it? Vayach banche Beit Shemesh kiro baron Hashem, God smote the people of Beit Shemesh because they saw in the Ark of God. Omar Rab Abba, Rab Abba says, Loma loku anche Beit Shemesh? Why did the people of Beit Shemesh, why were they smitten by God? Al yedei shehoyu malizin baron, because they made fun of the Aron, or they felt lightly about it. Listen, Amar Hakadosh Baruch Hu, said Hakadosh Baruch Hu, Ilu tarnegolto shel echad mehem avda. If a chicken belonging to one of them would have been lost, hayamachzir aleha come up tachim lahaviyah, he would have gone from door to door, from house to house, looking where is his chicken. Va'aroni, and my ark is Bisdei Plishtim Shiva Kadoshim. My ark is in the field of the Plishtim for 7 months. Ve'inaten malgichim bo. And you don't look at it, you don't care. It was only 7 months. The whole thing was only 7 months. I mean, this is quite an indictment. Quite an indictment. And let's not kid ourselves. You know, there are certain things that we get very upset about. You know, you lose your wallet and your ismench. Of course, until you find it in the jacket that you left it. But you're ice mensch. You don't function. And if you lost the car keys, al achas kama v'kama. Did they have precisely the same feeling with regard to the fact that the Ark of God has been taken into captivity? The Gemara says no. That, of course, is also reflected in the Gemara that says, Kotzrin u'mishtachavin. They were cutting the field and they were bowing down. If we are to follow something that we have watched and traced through the last few prakim, in the last few prakim, as we were talking about Eli and the sons of Eli, every so often the pasuk would present us with a comparison, a contrast. The sons of Eli are doing terrible things. Shmuel is mishareit at Hashem. He serves God before Eli. Eli is not able to do anything about his children. Shmuel grows even greater in the eyes of the people of Israel. There's always the idea of contrast. The scene shifts. Tov and Ra, side by side, so that the two come at us in much more powerful images when we see good and evil, Emet and Sheker, side by side. What we are now being presented with is Plishtim and Yisrael. The way in which they conduct themselves with the Adon Hashem and the way in which Jews conduct themselves. And in that comparison or in that contrast, Jews are found wanting. They did not conduct themselves in the way they should have. Further to the idea that you had expressed, Pina, Gemara in Tainus, a very famous Gemara, Kol hamitabel al Yerushalayim, zocher v'ro'eh b'simchata. Whoever mourns for Yerushalayim is worthy and has the merit to see in the joy of Yerushalayim. V'she'eino mitabel al Yerushalayim, and the one who doesn't mourn for Yerushalayim, eino ro'eh b'simchata, does not see the joy of Yerushalayim. One has a right to see and be full of joy in direct relation to the mourning and the sadness that one experienced in the absence of Yerushalayim. It may also mean, if one doesn't mourn, then having Yerushalayim isn't going to make any difference. It's not a matter of merit or reward that comes from heaven. If you don't miss something, you're not going to be terribly happy to have it if you have. I know my father, Hashem, always used to quote the fellow who, he was here visiting in Yerushalayim, and then some hotshot Jew comes in from New York and takes a cab and goes to the Kaisel. He comes back from the Kaisel, so my father asks him, so what do you think of the Kaisel? So he says, no, avant the olivant. A wall like all walls. Now, if you miss the Kotel, then you're going to experience something completely different. In the event that it didn't make any difference to you, yeah, Kaisel, nish Kaisel, so obviously it's not going to make any difference. I remember I mentioned my wife, I had something in mind. When we were visiting, we visited Eretz Yisrael together in 1969. So we were together with a group, and there was somebody in the group who was fine, big Talmud Chacham. I also had this feeling, Kaisel, Shmeisel, old city, new city, nah, bash man. So I got a little upset with him. So I told him, listen, I want to take you to see somebody. Not many people then knew of a man called Rav Yosef Sholem Eliashiv, who is today one of the two, three great poskim in the world. I knew him at the time. There was reason why he was in 1956. I got smicha from Rav Herzog Zecher Tzadik Lebrach. In order to get smicha from Rav Herzog, the first step was he sent you for a test, a bechina by Rav Eliashiv, who was a young man, but a member of the Beis Din of Rav Herzog. Rav Herzog saw that this man is going to be big. All right. Incidentally, he gave me a very good mark on the exam. But all right. An excellent mark. All right. I shouldn't say all right, in all humility, I'm not going to say the rest. Okay, we'll say that for another time. So I took this fellow to Rav Eliashiv and said, listen, what do you think of the... Or I had him ask the question. What's the significance of the return of Yerushalayim, the Kotel, all of the rest? The man, he got very upset. Said, you were sitting in America... You didn't know, and you didn't feel what it meant to live over here in Yerushalayim, and that we can't get to the Kotel. Do you know how painful those 19 years were that a Jew couldn't go to the Kotel? You were sitting there, it made no difference to you. Now you come over here, and you don't even begin to realize. You have no way of even appreciating what it means to us. Of course it's a big simcha. Tremendous simcha. I had asked him to respond to the idea, is Chaf Chet Iyar, the 28th day of Iyar, the day on which the Kotel was liberated, is that of great significance? This is what Rav Eliashiv said. I don't know if he'd say it now, but he said, of course, what a tremendous day that was. Kolam Sabal Al Yerushalayim, the one to whom it makes a difference. So obviously he's going to see the joy of Yerushalayim. There's a beautiful vote from Rav Kook. Rav Kook, Zechut Sadek Baruch, said the following. The Gemara says, "Kol ha-mitabel al Yerushalayim, whoever mourns for Yerushalayim, merits that he sees the joy of Yerushalayim rebuilt." Why didn't the Gemara say, "Zoche v'ro'eh"? He merits that he sees bivinyana in the construction of Yerushalayim. What do you mean, "Zoche v'ro'eh"? He merits that he sees simchata, the joy of Yerushalayim. Should have said that he'll see the binyan Yerushalayim. So he said, a lot of people are going to see the construction of Yerushalayim. Question is, how are we going to respond to it? For example, a building is being built. So what? People are sidewalk superintendents, right? And if you remember New York, the old days of New York, they put up these big walls around the building under construction with all sorts of holes in there if anybody wants to look in and see the construction. There can be 100 people on the street watching a big building going up. 99 of them look at it, with a certain kind of fascination and a curiosity, but there's one person who looks at it in a completely different way. That one person is the one whose building it is. It's his building going up. Everybody else is, a sidewalk superintendent's curiosity. It's nice, it's interesting, but there's somebody who's watching it with great joy. So he says, that's what Rav Kook said, that the Gemara was very careful. The Gemara said, Kol ha-mitabel al Yerushalayim, whoever mourns for Yerushalayim, Zoche v'ro'eh, is going to merit that he will see. And the Gemara doesn't write that he's going to see the construction of Yerushalayim. A lot of other people are going to see the construction of Yerushalayim. But he's going to see the joy of the construction of Yerushalayim. He missed it, he's now going to experience the joy. Others will see. You don't have this experience time and time again that you're going to meet up with people who come here. No, no, not terribly impressed. In America we have it better. It's nicer. It's okay. No.
I'd like to say something else. The word Katsil. Let Katsil, somebody had to plan. 7 months been away. So did they just leave that wall and went home and went to plantings? And now they have Katsil. Katsil means also that.
We'll come to that.
It's not just not being happy about at the time or not doing much. They did much more than that. They went and conducted a normal life with planting and cutting, forgetting all the mitzvot of Aliyah LaRegel. They still have to happen because they're only not there and going and building new gods. They substituted with another god.
There's no question about it. And this is the idea that we began before, that the fact that the Urim was taken was a terrible blow to faith. The blow to faith, therefore, set the stage for a certain degree of avodah zarah. But I'm saying a certain degree. I want to be very, very careful. Very careful about it. It doesn't really mean that Jews therefore went out and they prostrated themselves before the deities of Canaan. But there was something that died in the depth of their faith. There's something, and we'll see it in the next year. I know which psukim you're looking at. Yeah, I'm going to take care. We're going to deal with those psukim. Okay. So now, it means, yes, Anshei Beit Shemesh, in a sense, represent what it was that happened to Klal Yisrael. We don't have any indication. We don't have any indication that... I don't know, there were raids into Plishtim, people were preparing themselves to attack Plishtim in order to take the Aron back. We have no indication whatsoever. It seems, the Katsir is an extremely important symbol. The idea that they're busy in the fields. If anything, maybe there should have been people along all of the borders, watching, checking, doing something, bringing the message of what's happening to the earth. It seems no. Life just settled into an aronless routine. This was the problem. So that the idea that what happens at Beit Shemesh is not the result of one single moment of having been in error. It doesn't mean that the Rebbeinu Shem smites either 70 or 50,000 people all in one single instant of time, never, because people made a mistake in the moment of the great joy they looked into the Aron. It means that this is really the culmination of a period in which everything had settled into a routine, and it should not have been that way. There should have been a yearning, a longing. Steps should have been taken. Something should have been done. I know what Sandy is thinking. So why didn't Shmuel do something? Okay. So one of two things. You know, I can drag this out so that you'll forget the question by next week. But knowing you, that's not going to happen. But let's see. As I say, Shmuel is going to be the next chapter. But the point that we're making now is even more. The people of Beit Shemesh didn't even have a right to the joy that they experienced. What did they experience? So first of all, there was no awe and no reverence, it seems. There was something... they were not trembling in the presence of the Aron. If anything, what they were doing, yes, they were happy. According to the Gemara, what it seems is they didn't even have the right to be happy. Who has the right to be happy? The one who missed it. In other words, even that expression of the people of Beit Shemesh that would seem to be correct and legitimate, an expression that is honorable and respectful, even that they had no right to. The Gemara says, Medrash in Shmos Rabbah on a Pasuk in Mishlei. Pasuk in Mishlei says, Lev Yodea Morat Nafsho, Ubisimchato Lo Yitarev Zor. Lev Yodea, person's heart knows Morat Nafsho, the bitterness of his soul. Only a person really knows during a period of tragedy or illness, only one's heart knows the really how bitter he is. Incidentally, this pasuk in Mishlei is also a fundamental principle in halacha. If a person is sick and Yom Kippur says he has to eat, there can be 1,000 doctors who say he doesn't, and the chela is the one who paskins, because only lev yodea morat nafsha, only the person himself knows. Same thing with regard to chil Shabbos. If the person who's ill says, I need such and such, then that's what we do, because Lev Yodea Marat Nasho, ubisimchato, and then in the joy of this person, lo yitarev zor, the stranger has no place here. Says the Gemara says that when Jews were getting ready to go out of Egypt and they were going to have that first Seder with the Paschal lamb, so there were many Egyptians who wanted to join the festivities. So God said that the halacha is kol orel. Anyone who's not circumcised, lo yochal bo, cannot eat from the carbon Pesach. Why? Because the person who all of those years the Jews were in Mitzrayim didn't care about them, didn't suffer with them, if anything enslaved them. Now you want to get on the bandwagon and you want to be part of the festivities of Yetzias Mitzrayim? No, can't be. And here too, people of Beit Shemesh didn't even have a right to be full of joy, because their joy wasn't a genuine joy, because they had not experienced the loss of the Aron. Yes? One who is uncircumcised. Of the Korban Pesach. Only of the Korban Pesach. The sacrifice, Mehera Yibaneh Beit HaMikdash, and we're going to eat a Korban Pesach within the walls, only there, Kol Orel Lo Yochal Pav.
Can you please have the sentence
Lo Yit Arev Zor. The stranger has no place. It's in chapter 14 of Mishnah. Hazar. But of course, then we do have to understand the response of the people of Beit Shemesh, and that is obviously because there was a loss of faith. And you see, in the comparison or the contrast, remember the people of Plishtim had said, "This is the great God who took the Ivrim, the Hebrews, out of Egypt." They saw. In other words, the people of Plishtim saw and Jews didn't see. And if they didn't see, then they didn't have a right to look at the Aron. All right, anyway, now the end of chapter 6 is that the Aron was taken to Kiryat Yarim. So the people of Beit Shemesh said, "Who can stand before this great God, this Holy One? To whom shall it go up?" The last pasuk is Vayishlechu Malachim Yoshev Kiryat Yarim Lemar Heishivu Plishtim Et Aron Hashem Redu Halo Oto Aleichem. People of Kiryat Yarim, you take it. Chapter 7. Let's go. Vayavo Anshei Kiryat Yarim Vayalu Et Aron Hashem. The people of Kiryat Yarim came and they took up the ark of God. Vayavi Oto Beit Avinadav BaGivah. They brought it to the house of Avinadav in Givah. Ve'et Elazar beno kidshu lishmor et Aron Hashem, and Elazar his son they set aside, they prepared him that he should be the one who guards the Ark of God. Avinadav is an interesting name. Nadav va'Avihu, it's a combination of the names of the two sons of Aaron, Nadav and Avihu. And who was another one of the sons of Aaron? Elazar and Itamar. Elazar here is the son of Avinadav of Kiryat Yarim. Vayihim yom shevet Aaron b'Kiryat Yarim. From the day that the Aaron came to rest in Kiryat Yarim, vayirbu hayomim vayiyu esrim shana. They became many days, and they were a total of 20 years. This 20 years is going to cover 13 years that Shmuel is going to be a judge of all of Israel. It's going to cover another 2 years. Included in it will be 2 years that Shaul is king, and 7 years, part of 7 years that David is king in Hebron. David was king for 40 years, but the first 7 years he was king in Hebron because he had not been accepted by all of Israel. Only when he is accepted by all of Israel, then does he come to Yerushalayim and establish his throne there. Vayomer Shmuel, now Shmuel again reappears. Vayomer Shmuel, kol Beit Yisrael, Shmuel said to the entire house of Israel, lema, the following. Im b'chol levavchem atem shovim al Hashem, hosiru et Elohei hanecham mitochem v'ha'ashtarot, v'hachinu levavchem al Hashem, v'ivduhu levado v'yatzel etchem liad plishtim. Shmuel is going to do now something very similar to what Moshe does a number of times during the course of his of his leadership of Klal Yisrael. There are certain things that I have a feeling that a leader cannot do for a people until the situation reaches a point where the people realize that they need their leader. It was after the tragedy at Beth Shemesh that Klal Yisrael already sensed that they had fallen and they needed Shmuel. So Shmuel said to all of the house of Israel, "Im b'chol levavchem atam shavim al Hashem," if with all of your heart you are returning to God. So the first thing is sur meira, is the first. Turn away from evil, and then will come asay tov, do that which is good. Remove the strange gods from your midst, and the ashtarot. Now I want you to understand what this means. You may be left with the impression as though they have all sorts of strange gods there. The same thing is said by Yaakov to his children in Parshat Vayishlach, right after Shem. I am very impressed. Right after the massacre of Shem, and there is the dialogue between Yaakov and Shimon and Levi, where Yaakov says, "Acharta moti lavi sheni beinei yoshei haaretz. You have made me noisome in the eyes of all of the inhabitants of the land. They're going to surround me and they're going to destroy me." And Shimon and Levi answer their father and they say, "Hachizona yaseh achoteinu. Are they going to deal with our sister as though she is a harlot?" What Yaakov is afraid of is that after a massacre of this sort, they're going to be attacked and destroyed. And the fact is that there is an attack, and they begin to move through the land. The fear of God was upon the natives of Eretz Yisrael. At that point, Yaakov says to his children, "Hasidu, remove et Elohei Hanicha, the strange gods that are in your midst." What strange gods that they have. It could be that, or it could be something else. The Elohei Necha that is inside. What he's referring to is, in a sense, the idolatry within. Right? It can be pride. It can be the whole idea, of course, of Kochi V'otzem Yadi, my strength, my might, wealth, power, prominence. All of these things are a form of idolatry. We've talked about that in the past. Idolatry, worshipping oneself. We've pointed out a number of times that the worst idol of all is the idolatry of man worshipping his own accomplishments, his own greatness. And man begins to feel that he has the ability to resolve all of the problems of mankind with his science, his technology, his medicine. Until the Rebbeinu Shem comes along and there appears on the scene a disease that man had never even thought of or considered, and there it is, and man again finds himself helpless before a force that's going through the world and wreaking havoc. It humbles man. There is an Elohei HaNecha, there is a strange God within your midst. It's two things. It's on the one hand, man's own feeling of self-importance, and on the other hand, the feeling as though, well, God seemed to have been helpless. Where was God when his ark was being taken? So therefore, in b'chol levavchem atem shavim al Hashem, if with all of your heart you're doing tshuva to God, hasiru, first of all, remove the Elohei Anecho Mitelchem, the strange gods from your midst. V'ho Ashtarot. Ashtarot was one of the gods of Canaan. And then, v'hochinu levadchem, prepare your hearts for God, v'ivduhu levado, and worship Him alone. Similar words were said by Moshe Rabbeinu as well. Einod milvado, there is none aside from God. Ivdu levado means worship Him and Him alone and nobody else. And I say, it doesn't mean that they were worshipping somebody else outside of themselves. The ones that they were worshipping were themselves. And this isn't that also in Kitzir Chitim? In Kitzir Chitim? Siyat Chitim means that, you know, I'm harvesting. What's one of the reasons for the mitzvah of Sukkah? Sukkah is man ha'asid. Sukkah is the time when one gathers in everything. The granaries are full. There's a tremendous amount of wealth. And man may very well be tempted to think, look at all that I have accomplished. God says, go out into the little sukkah and you'll see how open you are to the elements, and that everything that happens in this world comes because of God. V'yatzeil etchem, then God will save you from the hands of the Plishtim. V'yosilu b'nei Yisrael et ha'balon v'ashtoret, and the children of Israel removed the Baal and the Ashtoret, v'yavdu et Hashem levado, and they worship God alone. V'yom Shmuel, and Shmuel said, keep to it, kol Yisrael ha'mitzbata, gather all of Israel to Mitzvah. Shmuel now is going to do what Moshe Rabbeinu does in Sefer Devarim, gathering all of Israel and speaking to them. He does what Yahushua does at the end of his life. He gathers all of Israel together. He says, gather them all together, v'et palel ba'adchem al Hashem, and I will pray for you to God. They gathered to Mitzvah, and they fetched water. They fetched water. Says the Medrash, v'chimayim shavu. They came, is that what they came to Mitzvah for, to do water fetching? I mean, is this what they came there for? I mean, if you read, somebody in the group who were fine, big Talmud Chacham, you know, sort of, I also had this feeling, Kaisel, Shmeisel, old city, new city, nah, Beshmer. So I got a little upset with him. So I told him, listen, I want to take you to see somebody. Not many people then knew of a man called Rav Yosef Sholem Eliashiv, who is today one of the 2-3 great poskim in the world. I knew him at the time. There was reason why he was in 1956. I got smicha from Rav Herzog Zecher Tzadik Lebracha. In order to get smicha from Rav Herzog, the first step was he sent you for a test, a bechina by Rav Eliashiv, who was a young man, but a member of the Beis Din of Rav Herzog. Rav Herzog saw that this man is going to be big. All right, he gave me a very good mark. But all right, an excellent mark. All right, I shouldn't say that. All right, in all humility, I'm not going to say the rest. Okay, we'll say that for another time. So I took this fellow to Rav Eliashiv and said, listen, what do you think of the... Or I had him ask the question. Well, what's the significance of the return of Yerushalayim, the Kotel, all of the rest? The man, he got very upset. He said, you were sitting in America. You didn't know, and you didn't feel what it meant to live over here in Yerushalayim, and that we can't get to the Kotel. Do you know how painful those 19 years were that a Jew couldn't go to the Kotel? You were sitting there, it made no difference to you. Now you come over here and you don't even begin to realize. You have no way of even appreciating what it means to us. Of course it's a big simcha. Tremendous simcha. I had asked him to respond to the idea, is Chaf Chet Iyar, the 28th day of Iyar, the day on which the Kotel was liberated, is that of great significance? This is what Rav Eliashiv said. I don't know if he'd say it now, but he said, of course, what a tremendous day that was. Kolam Sa'adal Al Yerushalayim, the one to whom it makes a difference. So obviously he's going to see the joy of Yerushalayim. There's a beautiful vote from Rav Kook. Rav Kook said the following. The Gemara says, Kol HaMetabel Al Yerushalayim, whoever mourns for Yerushalayim, merits that he sees the joy of Yerushalayim rebuilt. Why didn't the Gemara say, Zoche V'ro'eh, he merits that he sees Bivinyana in the construction of Yerushalayim. What do you mean, Zoche V'ro'eh, he merits that he sees Simchata, the joy of Yerushalayim? Should have said that he'll see the Binyan Yerushalayim. So he said, a lot of people are going to see the construction of Yerushalayim. Question is, how are we going to respond to it? For example, a building is being built. So what? People are sidewalk superintendents, right? And if you remember New York, the old days in New York, they put up these big walls around the building under construction with all sorts of holes in there for anybody who wants to look in and see the construction. there can be 100 people on the street watching a big building going up. 99 of them look at it, you know, with a certain kind of fascination and a curiosity. But there's one person who looks at it in a completely different way. That one person is the one whose building it is. It's his building going up. Everybody else is, you know, a sidewalk superintendent's curiosity. It's nice, it's interesting. But there's somebody who's watching it with great joy. So he says, that's why Rav Kook said that the Gemara was very careful. The Gemara said, "Kol hamitabel al Yerushalayim, whoever mourns to Yerushalayim, zoche v'roeh, is going to merit that he will see." And the Gemara doesn't write that he's going to see the construction of Yerushalayim. A lot of other people are going to see the construction of Yerushalayim, but he's going to see the joy of the construction of Yerushalayim. He missed it; he's now going to experience the joy. Others will see. You don't have this experience time and time again that you're going to meet up with people who come here. No, no, not terribly impressed. You know, in America we have it better. It's nicer.
I'd like to
bring
something else. The word Katsil, somebody had to plan. 7 months been away. So did they just leave that wall and went home and went to plantings? And now they have Katsil. And Katsil means also that
We'll come to that.
It's more than just not being happy about at the time or not doing much. There is much more than that. They went every day, conducted a normal life with planting and cutting, forgetting all the mitzvot of Aliyah LaRegel that we left to happen because Aaron is not there, and going and building new God. They substituted with another God.
There's no question about it. And this is the idea that we began before, that the fact that the Aaron was taken was a terrible blow to faith. The blow to faith therefore set the stage for a certain degree of avodah zarah. But I'm saying a certain degree. I want to be very, very careful about it. It doesn't really mean that Jews therefore went out and they prostrated themselves before the deities of Canaan. But there was something that died in the depth of their faith. There's something, and we'll see it in the next year. I know which psukim you're looking at. Yeah, I'm going to take care. We're going to deal with those psukim. Okay. So now, it means yes. Anshei Beit Shemesh, in a sense, represent what it was that happened to Klal Yisrael. We don't have any indication. We don't have any indication that there were raids into Plishtim. People were preparing themselves to attack Plishtim in order to take the Aron back. We have no indication whatsoever. It seems
the
Katsir is an extremely important symbol. The idea that They're busy in the fields. If anything, maybe there should have been people along all of the borders watching, checking, doing something, bringing the message of what's happening to the earth. It seems no. Life just settled into an oronless routine. This was the problem. So that the idea that what happens at Beit Shemesh is not the result of one single moment of having been in error. It doesn't mean that the Rebbeinu Shlom smites either 70 or 50,000 people all in one single instant of time, never, because people made a mistake in the moment of their great joy, they looked into the Aron. It means that this is really the culmination of a period in which everything had settled into a routine, and it should not have been that way. There should have been a yearning, a longing. Steps should have been taken. Something should have been done. I know what Sandy is thinking. So why didn't Shmuel do something? Okay. So one of two things, you know, I can drag this out so that you'll forget the question by next week, but knowing you, that's not going to happen. But let's see. As I say, Shmuel is going to be the next chapter. But the point that we're making now is even more. The people of Bet Shemesh didn't even have a right to the joy that they experienced. What did they experience? So first of all, there was no awe and no reverence, it seems. There was something, they were not trembling in the presence of the Aron. If anything, what they were doing, yes, they were happy. According to the Gemara, what it seems is they didn't even have the right to be happy. Who has the right to be happy? The one who missed it. In other words, even that expression of the people of Bet Shemesh that would seem to be correct and legitimate, an expression that is honorable and respectful, even that, they had no right to. The Gemara says, Medrash in Shmos Rabba on a Pasuk in Mishlei. Pasuk in Mishlei says, Lev Yodea Morat Nafsho, Ubisimchato Lo Yit Arev Zor. Lev Yodea, person's heart knows Morat Nafsho, the bitterness of his soul. Only a person really knows during a period of tragedy or illness, only one's heart knows the really how bitter he is. Incidentally, this pasuk in Mishlei is also a fundamental principle in halacha. If a person is sick and Yom Kippur says he has to eat, there can be 1,000 doctors who say he doesn't, and the chela is the one who paskins, because only lev yodea morat nafsho, only the person himself knows. Same thing with regard to chul Shabbos. If the person who's ill says, I need such and such, then that's what we do, because lev yodea morat nafsho ubisimchato, and then in the joy of this person, lo yit arev zor, the stranger has no place here. Says the Gemara says that when Jews were getting ready to go out of Egypt and they were going to have that first Seder with the Paschal Lamb, so there were many Egyptians who wanted to join the festivities. So God said that the halacha is kol orel. Anyone who's not circumcised, lo yochal bo, cannot eat from the Korban Pesach. Why? Because the person who all of those years that Jews were in Mitzrayim didn't care about them, didn't suffer with them, if anything, enslaved them. Now you want to get on the bandwagon and you want to be part of the festivities of Yitzias Mitzrayim? No, can't be. And here too, people of Beit Shemesh didn't even have a right to be full of joy, because their joy wasn't a genuine joy, because they had not experienced the loss of the Aron. Yes? One who is uncircumcised. Of the Korban Pesach. Only of the Korban Pesach. The sacrifice, Mehera Yibaneh Beit HaMikdash, and we're going to eat a Korban Pesach within the walls, only there, Kol Orel Lo Yochal Pesach. Lo Yit Arev Zor. The stranger has no place. It's in chapter 14 of Mishlei. Hazar. But of course, then we do have to understand the response of the people of Beit Shemesh, and that is obviously because there was a loss of faith. And you see, in the comparison or the contrast, remember the people of Plishtim had said, "This is the great God who took the Ivrim, the Hebrews, out of Egypt." They saw, in other words, the people of Plishtim saw, and Jews didn't see. And if they didn't see, then they didn't have a right to look at the Aron. All right, anyway, now the end of chapter 6 is that the Aron was taken to Kiryat Yarim. So the people of Beit Shemesh said, "Who can stand before this great God, this Holy One, unto whom shall it go up?" the last pasuk is Vayishlechu Malachim Yoshim Kiryat Yorim Lemar Heishivu Plishtim Et Aron Hashem Redu Ha'alo Ota Aleichem. People of Kiryat Yorim, you take it. Chapter 7, let's go. Vayavoh Anshei Kiryat Yorim Vayalu Et Aron Hashem. The people of Kiryat Yorim came and they took up the Ark of God. Vayavi Oto Beit Avinadav Vagivah. They brought it to the house of Avinadav in Givah. That Elazar beno kidshu lishmor et Aron Hashem, and Elazar his son, they set aside, they prepared him that he should be the one who guards the Ark of God. Avinadav is an interesting name.
Nachshon.
Nadav va'Avihu. It's a combination of the names of the two sons of Aaron. Nadav and Avihu. And who was another one of the sons of Aaron? Elazar and Itamar. Elazar here is the son of Avinadav of Kiryat Yarim. Vayihini Yom Shevet Aaron b'Kiryat Yarim. From the day that the Aaron came to rest in Kiryat Yarim, Vayirbu Hayamim Vayiyu Esrim Shana, they became many days, and they were a total of 20 years. This 20 years is going to cover 13 years that Shmuel is going to be a judge of all of Israel. It's going to cover another 2 years. Included in it will be 2 years that Shaul is king, and 7 years, part of 7 years that David is king in Hebron. David was king for 40 years, but the first 7 years he was king in Hebron because he had not been accepted by all of Israel. Only when he is accepted by all of Israel, then does he come to Yerushalayim and establish his throne there. Vayomer Shmuel, now Shmuel again reappears. Vayomer Shmuel, Kol Beit Yisrael, Shmuel said to the entire house of Israel, Lema, the following. In b'chol levavchem atem shovim al Hashem, hosiru et Elohei hanecham mitochem v'ha'ashtarot, v'hachinu levavchem al Hashem, v'ivduhu levado v'yatzel etchem liyad plishtim. Shmuel is going to do now something very similar to what Moshe does a number of times during the course of his leadership of Klal Yisrael. There are certain things that I have a feeling that a leader cannot do for a people until the situation reaches a point where the people realize that they need their leader. It was after the tragedy at Bet Shemesh that Klal Yisrael already sensed that they had fallen, and they needed Shmuel.